Thank you for tuning in to the Israel Podcast, Episode 4, The Cross. As I'm sitting and recording this episode, in front of me sits a very worn-out book that was published in 1965. When I say worn out, I don't mean worn out in a sense of when a book is read so many times and flipped through so many times that it simply falls apart. This book looks like it spent the last 50-odd years in the back of a closet and slowly rotted away. As far as I know, this book was only published in Hebrew, and it is titled Ima Hamutar Kvar Lifkot, Mother, Is It Okay to Cry Now? It is a collection of short stories on children who survived the Holocaust. The book is written by the teacher of these children, a member of the Bricha, or escape movement. The teacher is called Nesya Orlovich Reznik, and this specific copy also has a dedication, but I'll get to all of that at the end. I translated one of the stories in the book. In this story, Nesya recalls her interactions with one of her students and the conversations they had. The story is titled The Cross. Sitting alongside each other, Hanka, a Krakow kibbutz member, tall, blonde, and blue-eyed, and Leah, a girl of 15 or so, black eyes and two coal-black braids. As I opened the door, their conversation silenced. "I brought Leah Mendelstein to your house," announced Hanka, as she hugged the girl's scrawny body with her arm. I hope she will feel well here. Isn't that true, Leah?" The child says nothing. Her eyes are fixed at the table's edge, tight-lipped. She's all strung up. It looks like she could burst out crying at any moment. "You promised to take me back," says Leah in a monotonous voice. It is apparent she has been repeating this phrase for many times. "Of course I promised, and I will keep my word. But do you want to go back today? You should rest. Take a look around. Think. Today you're tired. I will come visit you in a week or two, and if you don't change your mind, I will take you back. Of course I will take you back." Hanka talks, and her hand never lets go of the girl's hand, her eyes looking directly at hers. Leah stays silent. She sighs with a voice that rises as if from a deep abyss. She walks after me to the shower like a prisoner to her cell. Hanka and I wait in the corridor, waiting. "It was a tough job," Hanka says. "When I reached the convent, the girls were at school. I asked about Vishnevska Maria. I told a nun that the girl is my sister's daughter and that I came to visit. The beginning was promising. The girls were arriving from school and I went out towards them. 'Where's Marisha?' The teenagers pointed me to three girls walking down the path. It was not difficult guessing which one of the three was Jewish. 'Marisha, someone is asking about you,' one girl called out to her. She stood still. The girls looked at me inquisitively and turned to look at me as they continued on their way. 'I'm your aunt, Marisha. I came to visit you.' I held her hand and kissed her. The girl stood perplexed. 'I do not know you,' she said, but still agreed to sit with me and chat. We sat by a ditch on the side of the road. 'Marisha, tell me something about home. Do you still remember?' The girl stayed silent, did not utter a word. 'Do you remember your father? He was a baker.' I helped nudge her memory. 'I looked for you forever. I almost didn't find you. Now I will never leave you. I will take you to my house for a visit. You might even want to stay there.' And as I went on and on, I suddenly asked, 'Do you remember you're Jewish?' 'Me?' She jumped as if bitten by a snake. I'm Polish, and was about to flee. Sit down, my child, don't run away. I held her arm softly. Sit, Leah Mendelstein. You probably have forgotten your real name, but I remember. Only then did she burst into tears. She was very confused. From that moment on, she showed no resistance. She agreed to walk with me to town, but only for one day. The problem was getting permission from the mother superior. I went to see her. I entered, blessed the mother superior in Polish, blessed be the name of Jesus Christ, and made the sign of the cross. In short, I behaved as a Christian. My appearance also, it seems, did not hurt. The mother superior treated me well, but would not consider the girl's travel. Tomorrow is a children's play, and the girl has the lead role. She will not be able to travel today. I would return her tomorrow morning, I promised. When we passed the gate, I knew the child would never return to this place. The leadership told me to go to this convent and find out if there is a girl there called Maria Wisniewska. Nobody thought I could get her out. At first, I took her to a coffee shop and bought her some sweets. I told her I was Jewish and of my life story. The little one began to trust me. We then went to the common house of the leadership in Lodz. We spent a night there, and now we have arrived here. It will be hard for the little one, added Hanka. I will come to visit and write to her. It is a shame you don't speak Polish. It might make things even harder. Hanka left. Leah stayed. In the first days, her behavior was not a cause for worry. Even though she walked the house with a blank face, without talking to anyone. In the mornings, when all the children were hurrying for assembly and morning exercise, she would stand in a corner, kneel, and pray lengthily. A golden, heavy cross was hanging around her neck. During meals, she would chew her food and swallow it without joy. She would arrive in class and sit silent with her hands crossed. In vain did the other girls invite her to community activities. She would complain of headaches and go to bed. The Polish books the girls would bring her would remain unopened. When I opened the bedroom door, I would find her lying in her bed with her eyes open. In vain did I try to convince her to get checked up at the medical clinic. When I managed one day to bring her to Chaim, the doctor, she refused to undress. I don't want to, she said. Let him check me as is, closed. Chaim prescribed her some medication. She refused to swallow the pills. I do not want to. She would shrug, and there was no use arguing. She would come to me daily for her Hebrew lesson. At the prescribed hour, she would write down a few words in her neat handwriting, read from the book, get a headache, and stop. I told her one day, "Look, child, we do not want to force you to stay here with us. If you so wish, let us know, and we will return you to the convent." "You ruined everything for me," she cried. "My friends there were already whispering that I am a Jew. How can I go back now? What would I tell the nuns, to Mother Superior? I was supposed to be in the play. I had the lead role. I ruined the play. How could I go back?" "If you ask me, you shouldn't go back. In the convent, you were always afraid to be found out as a Jew. Now the war is over. There's nothing to fear. Why do you want to run away from who you are? Why don't you want to be who you are? A Jewish girl. Leah Mendelstein. Why don't you want to take your name? The name your parents bestowed on you as a child. We're not going to stay here. We will all set off soon. To Israel. We will live amongst our people. You will be a Jew among Jews." "I'm no longer Leah," she replied. "They shot Leah. Twice even. Why should I be Leah? Why?" she asked me angrily. When I did not reply, she continued, "I lied when I said I do not remember anything. I remember every detail. I remember everything. I wish I could forget. I can't. I remember the attic we hid in." Then she spoke softly, without looking at me at all. "I remember how they discovered us, took us down, and led us through the streets. There was a water pump in the market square. They lined us up next to it. They shot us, and I fell. I do not know how long I lay there. I was certain I was dead. Then my eyes opened. I saw our neighbor, the tailor's wife, getting up on her feet, with a strange look in her eyes, and a face covered with blood. She was wounded. It was nighttime and dark around. I began thinking, perhaps I'm alive too. I got up. I stood up on my feet. The woman ran to me, hugged me close to her heart. We both walked to the ghetto. I remember she did not utter a single word. Although I was confused, I remember that when they took us down from the attic, my mother hid my two younger sisters and brother behind the door in the attic. I found them. It was night. I went through the empty houses and collected food. The tailor's wife helped me cook it. While I was doing all that, I kept on thinking, I can't be alive. They shot me. Leah's face was blank. She was whispering the words as if from a dream. The second time it was completely different. By then I was all alone. I escaped the war camp in Stoček. They began liquidating the camp. I escaped during the night. I wandered the woods alone. I suddenly met some people. These were good partisans. They took me with them. The Germans were on a trail and found us. They took us deep in the woods. They lined us up and ordered us to dig holes in the ground. I dug too. They fired. I too fell in the hole. They covered us with lime. It was hot and suffocating. I was all wet. I stayed alive. This time I knew it immediately. I waited. When it all calmed down, I tried to get out, to get free. I couldn't. The load was too heavy, pushing on me. Suddenly, I felt a hand reaching out to me. At first, I was terrified. Then I held on and got out. Facing me was an old man, wounded. He did not say a word. He held my hand and took me to the edge of the forest. Then I ran alone. I reached Gentile acquaintances of ours. Suddenly the girl was reminded of my presence. She looked at me with eyes wide open and tight-lipped. "They shot Leah twice. I no longer wish to be Leah," she announced plainly. "I want to be Marisha." The girl rolls up a piece of paper in her hands, completely immersed in telling the story. "Many other horrible things happened to Leah Mandelstein," I hear her voice. "I never told a soul. Many times I wanted to tell the priest during confession. I was afraid. One event does not escape my memory. When I returned home from the action and fed the children, we all lay down to sleep. In the morning I closed my younger sister, Dina, the 6-year-old. I put on her a blue apron and gave her a backpack. She was fair-haired and looked like a shiksa. I accompanied her to the street and told her, 'Go to the goyim and hide.' The child did not cry. She just walked away. I remained standing there. She turned her head and looked back at me. Her eyes, her look, I cannot forget it. "That's not all," tells me Leah. She takes a deep breath, as if about to dive into the abyss. I dare not move, utter a sound. Moments pass until I hear her voice again. In one of the other actions, I hid my other sister, the 7.5-year-old, and my 9-year-old brother in the bed under the covers. I was 11. The Germans entered. I stood by the wall with the tailor's wife. The Germans told us to go out. A Jewish policeman was with them. "There are other children here," remembered the Jew of all people. He poked and searched and found my brother and sister. The Germans led us all, but I suddenly had an idea. "I'll show you where there are other Jews," I told the Gestapo. "If you're lying, I will shoot you," he said and held a gun to my head. I walked ahead, leading them to the cellar. There were winding stairs. In one of the turns, I suddenly turned around, got away from the Germans and fled. "Leah, Leah!" yelled the two young ones, standing by the stairs. I ran. "Leah, Leah!" The shouts echoed in my ears, and I ran as fast as I could. I entered one of the nearby yards. I hopped into a house, thinking it was empty. Two Jews were hiding there. "Leah, Leah!" I heard the children screaming. I wanted to go back to them. The Jews grabbed me. They did not let me move. They held me tight. I no longer want to be Leah. I can't bear hearing that name. We continued meeting daily, right after lunch, to study Hebrew. We would open the book and read through it briefly. Leah would write down a few sentences in her notebook. Quickly, the book would be put aside, and she would continue our conversation. We would always go back to the same story. We convinced ourselves that little blonde Dina found a childless Gentile lady that took her into her home. I already knew the number of stairs that Leah went down, the layout of the house she hid in, all the words she spoke to those two Jews, and what they told her. "Let me go. I must go back to the children. I must." "No, you can't go. Stay here. You can't help them any longer. You will die." I knew they held her by force. Leah, too, knew that in the end I will tell her, "Leah, you had no choice. The German would have shot you on sight. He would have shot you once he realized there were no Jews in the cellar. There were only 5 stairs left to go down. Only 5. Her wide eyes would gaze at me when she talked. She took in every word I said. There was no choice. Sometimes she would add details to the main story. One time Leah remembered what her mother told her. "Leah, even fire will not consume you. You will overcome it all." She remembered these words in Yiddish. One day Leah told me in detail how she left that house where those Jews were hiding early morning the very next day. She went outside and saw some workers. They were digging up the collapsed houses, looking for hiding Jews. She found out from them that the tailor's wife and the two small children were taken away. They did not know where to. Leah wandered the streets until she arrived at a Gentile acquaintance's house in a village close to Chelm, her hometown. There, she found out her father was still alive and hiding in the house of a Gentile. Leah noticed I was wondering, alive? How? She quickly explained to me. Back then, in the first action, we hid in the attic. It was crowded, very crowded. All of our uncles and aunts came with their children and their babies. Father closed up the attic, hid the opening, and went downstairs. In our large baking oven was a hole. Father hid in that hole. One cousin and her little daughter arrived very late. They had no time to hide in the attic. She hid with her daughter under a large overturned tub in the corridor. They found them first. Shot them on the spot. Father remained in his hiding place. The father could not believe his eyes when his daughter showed up one day. He took her in. They found an excellent hiding place in a cellar. The house owners did not even know they were there. The cellar had potatoes. There was also a tub and two buckets. The buckets were filled with laundry water. At night, you could cook the potatoes in them. Everything was going well, until the Gentiles began suspecting that someone is stealing the potatoes. And they also started noticing the smell. Then father and daughter had to flee. Another Gentile acquaintance found Leah a job in the house of a Polish lady. And that lady's house, it was particularly good. The work was very easy, said Leah. I had to watch over a little boy. At night, I had to help the lady make moonshine. She was a good woman, a Polish patriot. At night, people would show up at her door. I would help her take out the moonshine to the people. I think they were partisans. Every now and again, a German man would show up, her lover. Otherwise, she would be suspected, Leah explained to me. One day, I went to the cellar to bring up some potatoes and saw my father standing there. Father said he had to come. He had nowhere to hide. He stayed in the cellar a few days. I brought him food, stole it, brought it to him. Finally, we both ran away from there. No Gentile would take us in. Our best of friends would open a crack in the door, hand out a piece of bread, and beg, please leave this place. Days passed. Leah put on some weight. Chaim convinced her to take her medication. In the kitchen, they would prepare treats for her. Every now and then, a smile began to show up on her face. The girls would manage to bring her to assembly. I thought everything was going well. One day, Leah came to class. She was in a bad mood. She refused to open the book. She began to tell me she's unlucky. She was always unlucky. She told me a lengthy story about a Polish woman called Babiash who hid her in her house. Babiash was a hard worker. She helped bake bread. She lived in Chelm, at the edge of town. She only had one daughter, a small child of about 4 or 5. I watched over the child, but the neighbors started to whisper. One neighbor was bullying her. If you don't get rid of the Jew, we will turn you over to the Germans. He would repeat this threat often. One day, Babiash came home. She told me to hide in a crate. She put a lid on the crate and two buckets full of water. It only took her a few seconds. Then she opened the door and yelled, come in! By all means, look around. Is there a Jew here? Search. By all means. The neighbors came in, looked around and found nothing. But since I'm unlucky, one day the Gestapo suddenly showed up. I did not have time to hide. The neighbors gathered round the house. I opened a window and jumped. I was chased by men and by dogs. A Polish woman grabbed onto me. "Żydówka!" she screamed. I do not know how I managed to get away from her. I ran so fast that no one managed to catch up to me. I ran out to the open fields. I got in the nettle bushes. I stayed close to the ground. It did not move. Late at night, I returned back to Babiash. From that day forward, I hid in the cellar most of the time. Sometimes I would enter the house when Babiash would come back from work. One day, I approached the window and slightly drew the curtain. On the pavement across the street stood my father. In his hands, a little Jewish boy. I do not know who the child was. I looked into father's eyes. Father stood there and did not look away for a long time. We did not speak, just stood and stared. I never saw father again. I was never lucky, she added. I was always being chased. Everywhere they found me out. Even when Babiash dyed my hair blonde and I was convinced nobody would recognize me. Once, I tried venturing outside in the evening. I crossed our street at lightning speed. When I reached the faraway street, I slowed down my pace. A gang of thugs approached me. They recognized me immediately. "Here is Leah," they yelled. I ran. They chased me and caught up with me. "Give us money or we'll call the Gestapo," they said. I had mother's watch. I gave it to them. They let me go. I couldn't stay at Babia's house any longer. I had to look for a new hiding place. That's how it is when you have no luck. The day after, Leah was still in a bad mood. This time she told no stories. She answered questions only with a yes or a no. On the third day, she did not show up for class at all. A day later, the girl stormed into my room. "You don't know what happened," started Yocheved. "Let me tell, I held her," interrupted Rachel. "We were standing at the courtyard gate looking. Leah too was with us. Two nuns walked by. They walked slowly. Suddenly Leah set off and ran after them. 'Sisters, sisters,' she screamed. I immediately know what she wanted. I ran after her. I held her forcefully and dragged her back to the courtyard. All the girls showed up. The sisters stopped and looked. They thought, possibly, that we were mocking them and making some noise. And then they continued on their way. The girls were all riled up." I was not at all moved by the story. "What if she just wanted to exchange a few words with the sisters?" I asked. "What if she knows them?" "No, she does not know them. She wanted them to take her away from here. I know this," said Rachel confidently. That day I showed up at class as usual. Leah was complaining of a headache and lay in her bed. I visited her room a few times. Every time she heard my footsteps, she covered her head with a blanket and pretended to be asleep. A few days passed, everything returned to normal. I never asked Leah about the sisters. I also swore the other girls to secrecy. Not to mention the event, to forget. We continued studying. Leah's stories continued. She told me of men from the Central Welfare Council who showed up in the village, where she was living in a farmer's house, herding his sheep. The council was looking for Polish children orphaned during the war. They came to Lea too. She told them she came from a village called Yagodzin that was set fire by Ukrainians. She heard of Yagodzin from the farmer. At the sorting station, they asked me, said Lea, what's my name? I did not hesitate. Maria Wisniewska, I said. Father's name, Stasha. Mother, Zosha. I told them I had a brother called Janek and a sister called Janka. I answered all their questions without giving it a thought. One man was sitting in the station, waiting for something. Come here, child, he said. I too am from Yagodzin. Who was your father? I was startled, but realized I had to stick to my story. Staszek Wiśniewski. I knew him. He was a good man, said the man. To this day, I do not know if such a man existed in the village or if the man simply wanted to help me. Lea started to tell me about life at the convent, about the good sisters and the bad sisters. Told me of a young Polish girl from Chelm who would write her letters. Those letters helped her a lot. I would tell the friends that the girl was my cousin. They would then fight with the girls from other classes that would claim I was Jewish. If she is a Jew, how come she has a cousin in Chelm? For this proof, they had no reply. One day, Lea sang to me a song they taught her in the convent. The little Jews waged war. Oy vey vey, pam pam pam. Even though the times were quiet. Oy vey vey, pam 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 pam. They created a lot of noise and commotion and then fled off to the forest. I was not enthralled by the song. Lea noticed it and added immediately. I never joined that play. I only sang the chorus with the choir. Only at the church I would sing solo. I had a singing teacher, a Polish man. When people saw me in the street, they would point it out and said, that's the girl with the beautiful voice that sings at church. At church I sang hymns. When I had to sing anti-Semitic songs in a play, I would always pray to myself, God of the Jews, do not punish me. My parents were very religious. After that, she started coming to all the assemblies. When the choir rehearsed, she stood on the side listening. The girls said at once she started singing, but when she noticed people were listening to her, she stopped immediately. She has a wonderful voice, Hava said. She sings 1,000 times better than Tziporka and even Batka, said Yocheved enthusiastically. To this day, I do not understand why the other girls were so patient towards her. If she exchanged a few words with one of the girls, that girl would run off and tell the other girls immediately and pass on what she said without missing a word. Everyone followed her and was impressed with every and any nice thing she said. They all treated her as older siblings. One day, Aryachke approached me. I have an unpleasant surprise for you. He took out a letter from his pocket and gave it to me. Read. The letter is in Polish. I don't understand. Read it out loud. Aryachke read it out. Dear sir, I would like to inform you that Wisniewska Maria was kidnapped by Jews. I implore you to come pick her up as soon as possible. She can bear it no longer. Therefore, if it is possible, I request to do this for me and come and take me because I'm surrounded by Jews and I cannot tolerate it any further. I wait impatiently. Blessed be Jesus Christ, Marisha. P.S. Please come quick. Well, asked Aryachke, how did you get this letter? I came into the girls' room. I looked for a book I gave to Lyova. Lyova said it was in the little cabinet. I looked under a pile of books. The rest I did not hear. When I sat across the girl at time for class, I could not open the book. The girl looked at me and waited. Leah, did you write this letter? I handed it over to her. She turned red. Her eyes widened and her mouth opened in shock. When do you want to go back to the convent? We will call Hanka. She will risk herself again for you. She will come and take you back. Just tell me when. I did not wait for an answer. The disappointment, the futility, and unbearable pain erupted out of me in a thunderous voice. The screams were a mixture of messages, and each one a bitter truth. And put together were a long-winded and unbearable speech. I could not force myself to stop. You are a Jew. You cannot escape this truth. You can convince one friend, maybe two, that you are Maria Vishnevska. But the third will rise up and call you a Zhidovka to your face. If you choose this path for yourself, go. No one will stop you. There's no need for a priest to come and save you from us. Your mother, did you think of her? What would she have said? I completely forgot about Leah. My screams were against the world itself and against what it has put us through. Then, through the fog, emerged a small thin figure, a Jewish girl with big eyes, black eyes, scared eyes. Embarrassed and helpless. Feelings of pity flooded my heart. It was clear to me. I should not have reacted this way. You tell me, I now pleaded with the girl, how can we prove to you that we only want what is best for you? Tell me, why don't you believe us? Tears were flowing from Leah's eyes. She gathered her notebooks from the table. It's not too late. You can still decide, I shouted at her as she walked through the door. She stopped, turned to me, tight-lipped. She did not utter a word. She walked away. Noon, the day after, Abraham came to us to tell us that during the designated time this week, he will not show up with his merchandise. We should postpone for a while, he said. It was May 5th. Abraham told us that a day before, 27 members of the Gordonia Kibbutz in Krakow set off through Novi Zansk to the Slovakian border. Two guys accompanied them and one man from the escape movement. They were ambushed by the AK. 14 were murdered, 6 seriously wounded. The rest managed to escape. Abraham was in a hurry. He had to reach an emergency meeting of the escape movement in Waldenburg. We called the children to assembly. We told them about the calamity. The children whispered among themselves all night in their beds. I did not meet Leah that day. I did not find the time the next day either. When I arrived on the third day to our regular meeting, Leah was sitting in the room waiting. This time I opened a book and without any conversation, started teaching the new lessons. I felt the child was not listening. I went on with the lesson. I had no will to start a conversation. Suddenly, a shiny object landed on the book. The heavy golden cross. I raised my eyes. Leah was pale white. Take it, she pointed at the cross. When we arrive in Palestine, return it to me. Abraham keeps all the children's valuables. I do not know how to keep things safe. My things get lost, I replied. Give it to Abraham then. I tore a page from my notebook. I wrapped the cross. My heart was beating strongly. I knew I had to say something to the girl. Something profound, something she could turn back to instead of the cross. Nothing came to mind. Well, I wrapped it, and I will give it to him. Now listen with intent, because tomorrow you will have to repeat the entire lesson to me. Leah moved her chair closer to me. A pair of calm, dark eyes of a Jewish girl. Finally at peace, looked back at me. The bricha, or escape movement, began as a spontaneous organization of Holocaust survivors who came out of the camps, the forest, and other hiding places, and began organizing for mutual assistance. They were the orphans, the bereaved, and sometimes the very last survivors of their entire families. The first to organize were Jewish partisans and members of the Zionist youth movements. They organized in kibbutzim, where Jewish refugees got a blanket, some clothes, food and shelter, a community and an address. These initial survivors later on met with the soldiers of the Jewish Brigade of the British Army, who leveraged their status and the means at their disposal for the benefit of their fellow brethren. Among these survivors were also thousands of orphan Jewish children who were rounded up and rescued by the movement from convents, Christian families, caves, and other hides out throughout Europe. These children needed care, education, and love that had been denied from them during the war. The movement operated in Europe until the establishment of the State of Israel and was responsible for the smuggling of some 300,000 Holocaust survivors from Eastern Europe to the ports of the Mediterranean. 300,000 survivors who chose to abandon the killing fields of Europe and establish a home for themselves in the land of Israel. As I'm recording this podcast, I'm looking at the book on my desk. It has a dedication in it, written in pencil, to Leah Mendelstein, with blessings. The book belonged to my grandmother. She was the toughest person I have ever met. Du wirst afilo in Feuer nicht verbrennt waren. Du wirst alles Ariebel leben. Even fire will not consume you. You will overcome it all. Thanks for listening and checking out the Israel podcast. I hope you tune in next time for another episode.